about one-third of the membership of this committee, and which means is that we need to be having at least around four members for us to be able to proceed in terms of the new rules. And then only decisions that we will await 50 plus one for decision making. But just to start the work of the committee, we need at least to be one-third. In other words, is that I can't start the meeting being alone. So now I think we can just grab anything else that we can grab at the door while we are just waiting for one or two members to pitch up. Mm-hmm. Let's give ourselves just the next 7 minutes. Now we are correcting. Just grab whatever you can grab and come back. Then I don't need to wait for 7 minutes now. We can start. I think we are four. Okay, it looks like we are ready. But at any time, any of you whoever has 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, you can just walk across, grab anything else, then come back with it, and then you can indulge in. Then, honourable members, I think today we convene this meeting because the department has managed to table the annual report yesterday, and then we have to get this work out of the department so that they can concentrate on other things, and that's why we had to really make sure that we have this hearing today, so that then it is left for us actually to prepare the report and finalize something that may be unlikely done this year. And then we're intending as well to deal with the BMA clause by clause. And I have just received information that today, I think it is the date that the Deputy President and the Minister, the two ministers, are supposed to be meeting at half past nine. That's what I've been informed last night, and I've been informed this morning by the Deputy President's Parliamentary Council. But we do have a very funny order paper today in the House that may require us every 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 7 minutes to go down to the House to go and vote. So there will be times that we will vacate here and come back, vacate and come back. And we will get used to it very soon. And if that happens, we'll request that the rest of the attendees here should not despair, so that when we come back, and then we are able to proceed. And then on that score, we recognize the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs, Honorable Chuan, is here, and also the Director General of Home Affairs is here, the Chief Finance Officer Olambi is here, then the Chief Director, Ms. Mayor is here, then the Deputy Director General Lumkise is here, Deputy Director General McKay is here, then Deputy Director General Ms. Mohoboko is here, and then we have got the Director for Monitoring and Evaluation, Ms. Tose, is here. And then I've seen Samuel has been running around here trying to organize. Looks like he has just disappeared. And then, but he's around here. Is Elroy here? I can't see. Yes, Elroy, Dion, CAC, Malakate. I'm not seeing them. Yeah, but then we have got Riaz Musa is here, the Deputy Director. And also from the Auditor General, then we have got Ms. Zwakala. Then we have got Ms. Walker as well, is the Senior Manager in Audit. And then we have got Mr. Mulu. I hope I pronounced it correctly. I'm trying my best. My phonetics doesn't allow me to pronounce these words as they are. And then we have got Ms. Mtumwa, the stakeholder manager is here. The state law advisors, they are hiding somewhere. Okay, Yolanda van Alstiefen and Issa Naiju, they are here. And then we have got Suen Isaacs is with us, always with us. And then we've got apologies. Apologies that we have that are standing is apology for S.J. Nkomo, then Dr. C.P. Melder. I did have a chat about attending today over the weekend, but I'm not seeing him. And then Ms. Mkalibi, she said she's not coming yet. I don't know whether she apologized, but she says she's not coming in, but looks like she has apologized to the secretary. Yes, and then possibly late arrival for Honorable Mnisi. Without really misusing a lot of time, when you hear the bell rings, and then it is not for all of us, it will be for members of the National Assembly to convene just below this committee room. I'm not sure whether it's going to ring inside this office, but we'll just ignore it if it makes noise here. Can we then request the Auditor General then to take us through as fast as you can, but not skip the important areas that needs to be raised sharp. Thank you. We'll proceed if you are ready.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Through my presentation, I will be assisted by Margaret Sioka. She'll speak to the financial side. I will speak to the compliance areas and the performance information. Chair, also, I think what we'll do is we will pick up from the presentation that was made in October. So when we go through this presentation, we're not going to go through all the slides. In essence, I think we've been through those matters as we went. So, Chair, I think the purpose of this meeting, you know, from our side as the AGSA, if we move on to slide 3, is to enable oversight, is to enable the portfolio committee through the audit outcomes, you know, discussing the, presenting the audit outcomes to the portfolio committee, is to enable oversight of the portfolio committee. And also to enable accountability from the department perspective, and then governance. The next slide, the areas explain the different audit opinions. I'm not going to cover this. I think we've covered this adequately in terms of the meeting in October. I'll just move to the slide where we speak to qualified opinion, adverse opinion, disclaimer opinion. The qualified opinion, which relates to the Department of Home Affairs, an explanation of that is just in certain areas, the financial statements were not reliable. So when we look at certain account balance in the financial statements, we're saying except for those areas, you know, the lines can be taken from the financial statements. So the qualified opinion speaks to that kind of situation where there are just certain account balances that have material misstatements. What we've done is we've now incorporated the Department of Home Affairs audit outcomes, you know, as it tabled yesterday, into the audit outcomes for the rest of the entities in the portfolio. So this slide you would have seen in October, but a bit of a different slide. Now we've included Home Affairs. If we look at the first one, we're saying, in essence, if we look at the bottom line there, when we look at the over 3-year period from 2013-14 to 2015-16, we've moved from a disclaimer of opinion to qualified opinion on the department, and we look at it, compare, you know, overall, we look at the results in terms of the portfolio. We said, you know, there have been, over the years, there's been some wins and there's been some losses in a sense. So we're saying, overall, if you look at the analysis, we're saying it's a stagnation. You know, the movement, you know, it's sort of the status quo remains in terms of the previous year. But I think when we speak to when it comes to the matters, I think what you'll understand from that is that it's not as we say it is in terms of you'll see the items affected will not always be the same in terms of the balances. Then in terms of compliance with legislation, I think across the entities in the portfolio we say there's one common trend. It's got to do with irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the non-compliance area, but with Department of Home Affairs, as we perceive further down, there are other areas of non-compliance, but I think as you say, in terms of the portfolio, you know, what we say should be focused on from portfolio perspective and something you know, relative to the committee is to look at supply chain SCM legislation, compliance with that legislation. Performance information, we've had improvement in the performance plan itself. In terms of the actual performance results, the annual performance report, when you look at that again, like I said, you see a level of stagnation. You see specifically there's two entities in the portfolio, the department and the commission. Those are the entities that have had findings year in, year out in terms of that report over a three-year period. However, what it doesn't show is what you're saying there has been improvement. I think if you look at the level of findings and you look at the number of findings, it's coming down. You know, and I think what we, you know, if we sum it up, we're saying if we look to the future, we expect that this area is going to mature and we, you know, we find a better result in terms of the performance against predetermined objectives. If we assess the internal controls, what do you say we need to focus on? We need to infer for the department, there needs to be improved oversight through monitoring and control procedures, that is leadership oversight. There needs to be tracking of the action plans. These are matters that we reported on before. And then also the implementation of policies and procedures, saying those areas need attention. You know, they need to be monitored. There needs to be actions for transgressions in terms of those policies and procedures. And we're saying, we speak of disciplines, you know, we speak of daily, weekly, monthly disciplines. I think, you know, the management in the department will understand what we're saying when we talk of, from the accounting side and even on the performance information, is the reconciliation of information where needs be the oversight over those procedures that we need to strengthen in terms of the department. Then when we look at the assurance providers, I think what we've done here is we've explained our assessments of the assurance providers, where we say that, you know, where action needs to be taken, we said from the accounting officer side and from the audit committee side, the governance structures, we say, the oversight and the assurance provided by those over, by those role players needs to be strengthened. And then, Chair, when we move on to the performance information, as I said, you know, if you look over a three-year period, the results have improved. And the outcomes have improved. It's contained now to one of the programs we look at here, it's immigration affairs. And particularly, we're saying we're looking at two indicators and two targets in that, you know, in all those, amongst those indicators, but within that program, there's just two areas relating to which affects the reliability of the performance information. But as I say, there's an expectation that, you know, we look at it over the years, it's been gradually improving. So we're saying we expect an improvement going forward in this area. Then if we look at financial management, these are the non-compliance areas that you'll find in the audit report that pertains to the entities. But speaking to the department, we said material misstatements in the financial statements submitted for audit on 31 May. Some of those misstatements were corrected. Some of those misstatements that could not be corrected led to the outcome, you know, the qualified audit opinion. The other finding is the non-compliance area is the prevention of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There's been no unauthorized expenditure in the current year. Then we had, in terms of contract management, you know, the procurement side, we had findings on that in terms of non-compliance. And then the last item is the revenue management. I think if you look at it relative to the previous financial year, 14-15, we're saying for the department, that's been an area, and this is where the area where your audit qualification is as well, in terms of revenue management. When we look at findings on compliance with the legislation on supply chain management, if you look at the irregular expenditure side, what has caused the irregular expenditures in these areas here, in the current financial year, if you look at all entities in the portfolio had irregular expenditure, and the areas was, you know, uncompetitive or unfair procurement practices, and also price quotations. So if you look at the first one and the last one, that's where all three entities had the same findings, you know, the where we said it was consistent in terms of the non-compliance. Specific to the department, were when we look at, we say compliance with the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act, where we look at thresholds for local content in the current year and the previous year. That is an area that potentially in the department that needs to be focused on. And then, Chair, I'll hand over to my colleague, Margaret Yorka. She will deal with the qualification areas over the 3 years.
The areas that relate to the 15-16 financial, they are marked dark blue. And also if you, because we have included the comparison for 13-14 and 15-16. So basically there is a reduction in the number of qualifications as compared to the previous two financial years. So mainly for the current year, we have qualification on current receivables. And then we have on cash and cash equivalents. The next one is the National Revenue Fund payable and the departmental revenue. So all these areas are mainly affected by the transactions that the department have with the Department of International Relations. So there has been progress in trying to, I'm sure the committee is aware that there's been an attempt to try and resolve these issues between the two departments. So there has been progress in resolving those issues. But however, the department couldn't really, during this financial year, resolve everything. So basically, what led to this problem is the issue of the accounting records and the reconciliation. They did try to do the reconciliation, but when we checked the reconciliations, we identified that they were not adequate. There were some gaps in getting to the correct balances. The other contributor was also the immigration control account, which I'm sure you are aware of, which was kept outside the department financials. So in terms of trying to resolve these issues, there was an attempt now to bring in the immigration control account into the department financials. But the problem was the fact that there were no adequate records kept for the immigration control account. So bringing it into the financials for the vote then resulted in these areas being qualified because of the lack of adequate records and the reconciliation. So mainly those are the issues, and if the department can put actions in working with DECO, trying to see how they can resolve these issues going forward, I should think that will help. But also I would like to report that when you look at the departmental revenue for the current year, there has been progress with regard to how the two departments has agreed on how to move forward. However, dealing with what has happened previously, trying to reconcile those amounts and making sure that we get to the correct balances, that's what there's still some work that needed to be done. But when you look at other areas that has nothing to do with this relationship with the other department, the department has progressed very well. They've been able to resolve most of the issues. So those are the mainly the cause of the qualification.
Chair, then on that slide also, basically those donuts explain, you know, relative to 14, 15, 15, 16 in the portfolio. As explained earlier, the material misstatements that were corrected, entities that were, we're saying the quality of the financial statements were submitted. So we're saying 15, 16, and we look at 14, 15 to 15, 16, we're saying there's an improvement in terms of the quality of the financial statements that were submitted. That improvement is relates primarily to the Electoral Commission that in the previous year submitted financial statements with material errors, but in the current financial year did not. Then, as we explained also, we said on the department side, what the errors that could not be corrected led to the qualification, both in the current financial year and the previous financial year. I think also, as I alluded to previously, if you look at the lines, the blue lines, the different shades of blue, on the left, you basically see that if you compare 14-15 to 15-16, you're seeing there's different balances in certain areas that's affected. And like I say, you need to look at that in context of what we're saying. Although we say it's stagnant, we're saying, well, it's not really... There has been certain levels of improvement in certain areas where certain account balances have been affected. And it's not always all the same balances affected all the time. And we move on to the next slide. In this slide, what we've done is we've just taken out the Department of Home Affairs. There's irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. On the fruitless and wasteful expenditure over the years, as you see, there's no bar. It's because it's so tiny in a sense. The amounts are basically 100,000 or below 100,000 on those. But those areas, the reasons for that fruitless and wasteful has been consistent over the years. It's basically interest costs on, you know, what we call no-show fees. And then when we look at irregular expenditure, if you look at over the years, if you look at 15, 16, you at 13 million, please note these are rounded off figures. So if you try to tie back to the annual report, if you round it up, you then come to the numbers there. What we're saying is that if you look at 15-16 relative to the previous 2 years, 15-16 there are two items. There's one transaction, I think, in the accounting officer's report, there's a mention of this transaction, a 5 million rand transaction, in terms of the procurement process explanation for why the procurement process wasn't followed for that. And then there's another transaction where the assessment, you know, the way the assessment was done, so it was not compliant in terms of the with the procurement process of the supply chain legislation. So basically, if you take those two transactions, which are about 10 million, then that will explain the jump from 15-16 relative to the previous financial years. The next slide just shows the other entities in the portfolio. Those are, so basically you can draw a comparison how the department fares in terms of the other entities in portfolio in terms of irregular expenditure or SCM compliance. And the next slide with the circles there, what we this is showing is that we're showing two entities 100%, so basically we're focusing on the Electoral Commission and the department. GBW is not included in this assessment because they didn't have irregular expenditure in the previous financial year and the year before that. And this slide shows basically consequence management attached to irregular expenditure. What we're saying, we didn't have any findings in our audit report reporting on consequence management, so that's why you'll see those circles there. We're saying there's nothing red in that area. And she was saying, well, what are the recommendations going forward? And what are the root causes? If we look at, this is for the portfolio, we're saying if we have to focus on three things, we'd say, you know, we need to, the areas are slow response to audit findings, that area needs to be addressed, inadequate management oversight, so, you know, the oversight responsibility, making sure compliance with laws and regulations, making sure there's compliance with policies and procedures, and then consequences, where we say those are areas also that we've reported in the previous financial year, and we still believe those areas that if we just say we have to focus on three areas, that those are the areas that we need to look at. Then on the middle slide there, we speak of the commitments. Those are commitments that we've gotten from previous financial years from the executive authority. Those commitments, we say, are still in progress. Where we, in certain areas, like, as we say, in terms of the asset management, we're saying there's progress in that area. But we say overall, these are areas that are still in progress. The yields we'd expect to see in years to come. And then we're saying, what are the recommendations? We say address those three root causes. The first one, we say regular monitoring of the action plans. You know, we make sure that the department has a robust action plan. Management, leadership of the department has to monitor those action plans and provide feedback, you know, potentially quarterly feedback to the committee in terms of how the department is addressing the matters. internal controls, where we link it back to oversight and consequence management. We're saying, you know, just to make sure that there are controls, there's policies and procedures in place, that they are monitored for compliance, and also providing feedback, you know, maybe in the form of a dashboard to the committee in terms of how the department's faring in that area. And then consequence management, we're saying, you know, actions, if we look at certain of the transactions, we're saying there are certain areas that are repeat. And also we say when we look at the root causes and we look at the bar graph there, we're saying those areas there, it's the root causes that we've reported in the previous financial year as well. So we're saying in order to gain traction in that area is to potentially look at, you know, the consequences in these areas, in the area of financial management specifically. And the last item, what we're saying is continue engaging the stakeholders on the foreign revenue side. My colleague has alluded to the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, saying let's continue engaging with them to get a solution, understand? No, whatever their solution is, I know there has been significant engagement over the years, but I think to address the matter going forward, it's not something that the department can do on their own. There needs to be engagement. It's not something you can sit on your own. You need to sit with the other entity and come to a decision and come to credible actions to address the matters that the department faces in China financially. Thank you, Chairperson. That's our presentation. Take any questions?
Thank you very much. maybe just before you leave, on these recommendations, 1 to 4, have you engaged the department and what was the response of the department? So that we are just simply a little bit much more clear, or whether these have just been crafted after you have engaged the department and the department is not aware of your recommendations, or have you, during your management meetings with the department, have you actually engaged them on this, and what was their response? If you have a response to that.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think what we have is we issue a management report that has a whole lot of recommendations. I think the timing of the audit, what will happen, next steps from here would be, you know, because basically what you're doing, you're taking all the recommendations from a huge document and you're putting it down into three areas, you're sort of summarizing. So what needs to happen, the next steps from here, is a workshop with the department, like a debrief session, where, you know, you sit down and then you start putting all these recommendations down and saying, okay, let's now work on these areas. What I'm saying is these recommendations are contained in the audit findings that we issue. It's contained in the audit reporting, well, not so much the recommendation, the internal control deficiencies is contained. But I'm saying to packaging like this, that still needs to happen going forward. You understand? Where, like I said, you take in basically about 50 or 60 recommendations and you condensing it into four areas to focus on.
Okay. Honorable members, welcome, Honorable Nisi. The Auditor General has just done his work. Are we having any issue for the Auditor General to explain anything or clarify anything? Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. I think my clarity is only, maybe I don't know whether the clarity is only, yes, not a clarity per se, because some of the questions I've asked from the department during the last their time. But I just want to check on page 19, when what advice again can you give to the EC and the LGBTW, noting that the minister is not accountable for them.
Honorable Raputi.
Thank you very much for the presentation. I can't really understand Auditor General, especially on the issues of qualification on slide 14, on figure 3. What actually do you want? What needs to be done, especially in figure 3, slide 14, because on my view it's cumbersome for the department, and also, you know, because I'm also serving in the Portfolio Committee of International Relations. So Auditor General, if they can really assist on that issue. So what actually do you want to be done? Thank you.
Honorable Nisi, are you collected by now? Are you ready? Okay. All right. And Honorable Ndongeni, still finding the footing.
Morning. I'm not quite sure whether I'm in or out, and I don't know. I want to ask, but maybe I'm going to ask questions which have been already, because it means it's a long story. I don't know whether it's a long story or what, but okay. If I'm wrong, you're going to correct me, no? On slide 15, I don't understand. I'm not quite sure. We are talking about irregular expenditure, 13 million. I don't know. It's 1 million I don't know, it's 214 on 2014, 2 million on 2015. On 2015 to 2016 is 13 million irregular expenditure. It's for 2015 and 2016, eh? Okay. It's for department, get this. Let me pause there, Chair. Let me pause there.
Yeah, the department is coming, will come and explain the 13 million, and then what has happened to it. Okay. I think in the past, Auditor General, we tried to devise some sort of an interim measure to say that the department must have an activity mid-term, halfway in the year. For purposes of assistance, I'm sure it's one of the major issues. Now I think we must be released just to rush down to the house and then we'll come back. But I just need a response on that one, is whether that engagement has happened halfway the year with the department, with the chief finance officer. Then I think the other question I'll just come and ask when I come back. Can you just pardon us just for the time being?
Thank you. Thank you.
then we may proceed. When I left here, I did try to ask about the arrangement that we try to make for the Hotel General to assist the department to have some sort of halfway or midterm engagement in the financial year, because we are moving from a situation where they were having a new CFO, and then there were these particular matters of that relates to Derco. And then the next question from my side is in relation to, we had the Auditor General here. The Auditor General addressed us here in Parliament, and then there is one point that he tries to make in relation to Home Affairs. In relation to Home Affairs, and then the late or whether it's late submission or incomplete or late tabling of the annual report of the Department of Home Affairs. And then he raised one of the problems as the slow response from the Office of Auditor General / National Treasurer inappropriately advising on complex technical matters, e.g. on the Graph 103 exemptions and blah, blah, blah. And then we did not get too much into this for him to explain what he was trying to say. But what we could read is that he was apportioning some sort of blame to the Office of the Auditor General and National Treasurer that they were slow in advising the Department of Home Affairs on complex technical matters. And then probably then you can also try to explain, because we may not expect the Auditor General to be very clear on detail. You guys may be having all the details. What is there that the Auditor General was sought to actually apportion blame to Treasury and the AG? Okay, and then the last question from my side is that we painted a picture on the, that is on page 9. On page 9 in the Leadership, Financial Performance Management and Governance, you actually say that this department needs incubation in relation to leadership, financial performance and governance, because you had yellow and something that I don't know what that color is, but where you say it's intervention required, where it's yellow is that it is concerning, and then there is nowhere where there is any green color. But then as we move forward, the other side, then you cited some sort of improvement in some couple of performances on the department and some other areas where the department has been stagnant and not actually regressive. And then possibly maybe you can just explain those to me as well. You may proceed if you are ready.
Thank you, Chairperson. Through you, Honourable Chairperson, the first question, what advice for the Electoral Commission? I think from our side, you're saying there are internal control deficiencies. If you look at the Electoral Commission, the findings related to irregular non-compliance in terms of irregular expenditure. What do you see in the oversight? You know, the matters need to be, in terms of the commissioners, they need to take accountability for those, for addressing the internal control deficiencies, the root causes in that area. And obviously, I think from the committee's perspective, is to oversee the commission's implementation of corrective action in terms of compliance with legislation. I think that's, from our perspective, the only thing that we can recommend in that area. Then, if we look at, we're saying the qualification, the specifics on this qualification, I will leave it to my colleague Margaret, to assist me on that one. The irregular expenditure chairperson, I think we said that the department is going to speak to it. I think also, but if you look at that slide, it's got the irregular expenditure. That's slide 15. If you look at it, it's basically, you look at the slide on the left and the slide on the right. The slide on the right, if you take the dark blue bars, it recons to the 13 million. You understand? So it gives you, it breaks down that 13 million in terms of where the areas of non-compliance were. In terms of the midterm activity, Chairperson, what we do is we do an interim audit at the department. Year in, year out, we're doing what we call an interim audit. So it's basically auditing the 6 months of the year. The idea is you give a heads up to the department in terms of internal control deficiencies that may arise in the final preparation of the financials so that action can be taken. I think what we must be cognizant of is that, and this has been the situation for the past 3 or 4 years, is that the areas of the balances that have been qualified, if you look at that other slide with the dark blue bars that my colleague explained, those balances were not audited because they were not ready for auditing. The department could not submit that information for audit. So those numbers only come through with the financial statements that are submitted on the 31st of May. So essentially we cannot influence any action there or cannot give a heads up, so to speak, because we don't get that information to audit. What has changed in the current financial year is on the asset management side, there was information provided to us on the asset management, part of the asset register that was provided to us for audit. But there is ongoing interaction. I think, what we have is weekly steering committee meetings. We discuss the matters. So it's I think it's pretty rigorous. Then you send the AG point on a slow response on complex accounting. That item 4, it says the OAG, National Treasury, so that's the Office of the Accountant General and National Treasury. So what the AG was alluding to is that if you look at the revenue issue at the department, what this matter arose, I would say last year, around about this time where we started engaging, around about October, November, and there was constant back and forth engagement on this. I think what we're saying is that the information that came through, the guidance that finally came through from the Accountant General side or from National Treasury side, that came through, and I think the department will keep me honest on this one, I think around about June or July, I think. So so that affects how, how quickly you can react to it. It affects your financial information, because I think also what you must be wary of is that, as we say, this is information that goes back several years. And reconciling, it's not something you do overnight or within a week. So what we were saying on that is that there needs to be, by the time, and that's why we say you have effective action plans in place. Bearing in mind, we're sitting in December, there's 3 months to the financial year end. There needs to be rigorous engagement up to the financial year end, and before you submit that financial statements by 31 May, there must be clear guidance in terms of what you're submitting, what information is coming through, and how you need to supplement that information, and what actions are required. Because you can't properly plan if you don't know what is the animal you're facing, so to speak. Then to speak on the slide on internal controls, what we're saying is, yes, there's been improvement. We're saying there's areas, like if we look at the audit qualification areas, if we look at the performance information, and if you look at compliance, compliance areas have reduced, non-compliance areas have reduced over the years. I think what we say when we look at the internal control areas, we're saying there are certain things that are recurring. As I mentioned before on the last slide, when we said if we have to focus on three areas, we're saying those matters are recurring. And when we say the slow response by management, you know, consequence management. We're saying those areas need strengthening to ensure that we don't reach a stage where, you know, we're dealing with the items at the last minute. So that's why we're saying from that perspective, yes, there needs to be intervention, there needs to be oversight, and that's why we're also suggesting quarterly reporting in terms of tracking those action plans. Because, as I say, is that certain things can be avoided, you know, and what we are suggesting is proactive management of the process in a sense. Then, Chairperson, I will hand over to my colleague to speak on the specifics.
Yeah, I can speak from wherever she is.
Okay. I'll address the question relating to qualification issues and what should be done, and the fact, or the question of what should be done by the department. As I've indicated earlier,
said is an honorable let it just very difficult. I'm sure it's you may be aware today that we're supposed to pass the schedule of votes on the Italian wider by this allocation. So we have to approve on that schedule. There is a possibility that we may sit here until 1 o'clock midnight. When you enjoy your dinner, you must just remember that you are doing it on our behalf. Okay. I think you can proceed now just to explain whatever you're explaining so that we can get the department to respond to some of the things that you said. Proceed.
Thank you, Chair. As I was explaining, the qualification areas are mainly affected by the inclusion of the immigration control account and the reconciliation of balances that relates to DECO. With the immigration control account, the challenge was that the department did not keep adequate records for the immigration control account. So when it had to be incorporated into the financial statements for the department, then we had an issue because we were including the accounts that were not where there was no adequate records. And then when to address the issue of what needs to be done with the immigration control account, because now it has been incorporated into the financials of the department, and there's plans now to close that bank account and to transfer the funds to the National Revenue Fund. So during this cycle 16-17, so the department will be able to deal with that issue of now closing the immigration control account and transferring the funds to the revenue fund. So that issue then is in the process of being resolved. When we look at DECO reconciliations and the balances, I think engaging with DECO, like we've indicated as part of our recommendations, engaging with DECO and making sure that that balance that we have payable to DECO, we are able to reconcile it and we are able to agree with DECO to say this is the balance that is owed to DECO, and also paying over whatever that is being agreed with DECO, that will be a way forward in terms of addressing that issue of reconciling balances with DECO. Thank you, Chair.
Can we say that now you have gone past the problems of accounting principles?
Chair, I know there was...
In relation to this specific matter, the accounting principles is now clear between yourself, Treasury, Account General, Department of Home Affairs. That one is clear. It's now what is left is dealing with the actual records of the account. Make sure that that is reconciled, then closed, and put a seal.
Yes, I can confirm that, because there was an issue of complying with MCS, the issue of departure from the MCS. That has been resolved now. What is remaining is just to make sure that those amounts are properly reconciled, like you mentioned, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you. I think the DG will tell us whether it's of the same opinion that you have agreed and that everything is clear in terms of the principles now. Can we then, you've got a follow up?
Yeah.
Yes, proceed.
Actually, on the issues of assets, so what is the take on that? And which are those assets?
To you, Chair, the issue of assets have been resolved now. So there's no more qualification on assets for 16-17. So we have addressed those.
Contingent in that slight figure, because as I'm saying, the international relation, they are having problems on qualifications on this figure, and then these contingent assets, what are those? Besides your accounts and all, but what are those contingent?
Chair, through you, the contingent asset was also relating to, because previously the department would only recognize the revenue when they've received the cash and they've received the supporting documents from DECO. So in cases where they haven't received the cash but they have the documents, the department will correct me, they will have that contingent asset. So in my introduction, I did mention that there was a move to try and resolve these issues, but they were not 100% resolved. So that part of contingent asset, it was an issue during the previous year, but during the current year, with an attempt to resolve, it has been resolved now. It's no longer an issue.
So in other words, is that we are moving towards a clean audit next year? Because some of the hurdles that we have, you are saying that as far as you are concerned, you believe that they have been resolved. What is left is just compliance from the accounting officers of the Department of Home Affairs to comply with the agreed system. No, thank you very much. And do you have to say anything more?
No,
are you ready to say something?
No, Chair, I think just for the member there, I think the DIRCO assets and the contingent assets are two different things in terms of the accounting side. Okay. The other thing also, if you say, are we heading for clean audit, I think that it's something you ask the department. I think if we say those recommendations and those root causes, if those are addressed, I think we're heading in the right direction.
Okay. Okay, but I think that we still just need to say to repeat the same thing. I think that arrangement that we raised for you to meet with the department at the interim level to try and get, you know, to verify this specific account that is getting closed, so that we don't wait right at the end, and then we start raising questions, and then we start digging very deep and get some of the tap roots out there to the top, and then people begging to choose them, then it becomes a bit of a problem. Halfway, engage them with the CFO, and so that at the end of the year, then we must be moving towards a particular nice goal. Thank you very much for your input, and the Deputy Minister, are you ready?
Yes, certainly, Chairman. I've just sent the Minister a message to say he can join us now. But I'm sure the Minister wouldn't mind us going through the presentation and then responding to any questions that members may have thereafter. So perhaps we should just go straight into the presentation with the DG Chairperson, with your permission.
Yeah, well, if there is a political preamble, it's fine. Then you can proceed, and then the Minister then can close if he's got anything to say. And then we can proceed. Of course, we have got challenges of time today.
Well, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, the Deputy Minister, and colleagues. No, Chair, I'm going to try now on this presentation to shift it in a manner that we're able to cover more on the Auditor General's issues. So, Chair, what I'll be doing, I'll just go straight to slide number 6. Slide number 6 is to say in 2013-14 we achieved 53% of the targets, and then now in 14-15 we improved to 70-30%, and then now in the current year is 81%, and is what has been confirmed as well by the Auditor General on their slide number 11 when they were saying that we have improved. So Chair, rather than now going and deal with what we have not achieved, I want now to move to the finance, and then I will come back to what which we have not achieved. If it's agreeable with the Chair.
Yeah,
okay, Chair. Then let's jump now, Chair, to slide number. The slide starts with financial management. Slide number 54, Chair. Was I'm pushing this. There it is. Chair, on slide number 53, want to start there and say in 2013-14 we've listed what were the issues, but in 14-15, Chair, we had a problem. When I say departmental revenues, all those accounts which are related to DECO and including the fines, and then the accruals and payables, I'll come back again, was including DECO, and then we have intangible assets. In this year, there are two matters. is the departmental revenue, which is foreign. Fines are not there. And then it is accruals and payables, which we have a problem. So the rest is not having an issue. But Chair, to understand this, we want to put as a legacy issues, as we have mentioned, that in 2014 we amended the law to say, fine, we will no longer charging administrative fines to overstayers, and anybody would be declared as undesirable. Then the second point, we do away with the requirement of what we called a repatriation deposit. A repatriation deposit was that when people are going to be visiting the South Africa, they will pay a certain amount, which now if they come back within time, they have to go back and claim that. So we're no longer imposing that repatriation deposit. Secondly, now a traveler has to come up with two tickets. But an important point, Chair, is that the immigration control account was not part of the vote. I think that point is very important. It was running outside because it's the monies which were belonging to individuals. So they come and claim them. But what were the implications of this now to the financial statements? One was that now any fine which has been recovered now through EMCS will now accountable as revenue. So it's starting to complicate now our revenue, because the revenue was only your passport, your fine, your ID and all that. So we understand that. I was still on slide 54. I was trying to explain the legacy. So I was saying now, what has been impact now on the financial statements? I was saying that the second thing was that with regard to repatriation, we had to issue a government gazette which said, if you did not claim your repatriation before February 2015, you are forfeiting that. But what that now resulted into, we had now unclaimed repatriation deposits. Then that has to be regarded now again as revenue. Remember, it was not part of revenue. Then now we have to regard it as revenue. But when we're discussing this thing now in the 2014, it was, we will just simply take the balance from that immigration control account and pay it into the National Revenue Fund. No reconciliation, nothing. We're just going to take the balance, pay it in the National Revenue Fund, and then we close this. But let's come again now to what has been the complications now. Treasury gave us what we call departures. The first departure, which was prior 2013-14 financial year, we're only recognizing, this deals with revenue abroad, we're only recognizing revenue upon receipt of documentation and payment from DICO. So what it means, Chief, DICO collected 100 rand, but gave us a document of 40 rand, plus the payment of 40 rand. That's what we're recognizing as revenue. What we don't have a document for, we're not recognizing it. We've got a document now of 20 rand, but has not yet been paid. It was recorded as accrued revenue. So the difference was not recognized at all in our financial statements. That's how we were audited prior to that. Then in the 2013-14, now to 14-15, things changed. Then it says now we must recognize the revenue on receipt of documents and payment from DICO, and we must match the two. And then any payment made against a voucher not on hand will have to make that a payable that we owe DICO now, because they've paid us but they've not yet submitted the document. Then all what now is documented, which we do not have, is what the honorable member was talking about, the contingent asset. All what now, you don't have a document at all. DICO collected 100 rand, paid you 60 rand. The 40 rand has no document, has not paid you. That you will put now as a contingent asset. So it means now this account now is being divided into too many segments. And then again, our documentation on hand not paid by DICO was then now recognized as a receivable. That's why now if you take that list, it will be writing now this and this and this. It's trying to split all these things into all those segments. Then again, now check it at the end of 2014-15, all those departures now were revoked. They said they are no longer applicable. So we're like starting now, we must have a full compliance now to the modified cash standard. What that meant now is that we have to account for all revenue on this thing called an agent principal basis, meaning that now the revenue, once the transaction has taken place, whether you've got a document or no document or whatever, that must be recognized as revenue. So if DICO collect 100 rand in a month, all that 100 rand, you account for it, whether you've got a document or not. Then we said, you know, what we'll use as a source is just a cash book, because DICO sent us a cash book that in the month they've collected 100 rand, but I don't have documents supporting that. I just take that cash book, I use it as the total amount which has been collected. Then the key thing, and I was the one to say, however, if there is any error or omission now found on that process, it will have an impact in the audit of Home Affairs, not of DICO. Then, let me come now to this thing called, again, have these directives. I think there's a very important part which want to deal with it. Then, Chair, on the 26th of May, now we're dealing with this financial year now. We received, firstly, it starts with the auditor. If you go to this document here, it starts, you remember, Chair, you asked whether we've been meeting with the auditor general as we agreed in the last year. We were. Then in 7th of December, I received this letter from the auditor general based on the discussions we had, the first letter under Directive 1. Chair, I want us to refer you to page page 3 of the letter. It starts with the current year agent-principal relationship. It says, Chair, our office held discussions with the Office of the Accountant General. So that's why, Chair, when the response from AG says management is not responding. Chair, I'm not responding from, it's a decision from me. I must get Treasury. Based on that, it's then that I can respond to Auditor General. But now when it is written, it says management is not responding. But in the Auditor General's report, also referred to the slow response from the Office of the Accountant General. But if you read this, Chair, it says, which agreed the following key matters on stakeholders in National Treasury. The arrangement with DICO meets the definition of a principal agent arrangement. DHA is the principal, DICO is the agent. the necessary principal arrangement disclosures should be made by both departments. Secondly, DHA should not recognize revenue because it does not receive any cash. Therefore, DHA should add a narrative to the departmental revenue note stating the amount DECO received on DHA's behalf and details of this arrangement. That is what I get a letter now from the Auditor General on the 7th of December. Once I receive this letter, the second letter, I have to go back now to the Auditor General, sorry, to Treasurer, to confirm the same principle. If you go on the second letter, point 7, it says, now simply put, the revenue must be earned and received by DHA in order for it to be reflected as a departmental revenue in the financial system and in the statement of financial performance. So what it means, Treasury and Auditor General agrees that the revenue must not be shown in the financial statements of the department. However, it must just be a note. Then, Chair, based on that, 31st May, department submitted the financial statements. And the financial statements we submitted in May complied with that directive. There's no revenue in the financial performance, it's just a narrative. Now, on the 10th of June, which is now, if you go to Directive 2, again, I receive now an audit finding from the Auditor General. If you go to page 3, in fact, yeah, if you start from page 3, it starts by saying now, it talks about the material misstatements, but I want to go just to the revenue recognition now. It says the accounting of revenue collected by DECO on behalf of DHA is accounted for based on the accounting treatment set out in Modified Cash Standard Chapter 7. This establishes that an agent is acting on behalf of the principal, and therefore any money collected by agent is also money collected by the principal, and therefore revenue of the principal. But what was important is this next line. DHA has disclosed the revenue received by DECO on behalf of DHA for the current year as a narrative of the annual financial statement, and therefore has not recognized the revenue in the statement of financial performance. Then it disagrees now with what we were given in December. Is contradicting now to say what we agreed is not what you're supposed to be doing. It went further and say clarity required regarding the communique dated 26 May, that one which I've got from Treasury. But I want to go just to the next page of that, the last block. I'll just read the last sentence. It says now, because Treasury was saying this thing is just an administrative arrangement, does not need the change of accounting policy. Now, Auditor General is saying, is this change in the administration's arrangement purely with reference to the fact that the cash will now be transferred directly by DECO to NRF? If this is the case, does it also then mean that the previous accounting policy of DHA, that is recognizing transactions when the voucher is received and not when the transaction actually takes place, still applies? So they are showing now a contradiction. We are not clear as to what this is referring to and what the implications are. If we go on the basis that all revenue transactions for 15-16 are now disclosed as a narrative in the departmental revenue note, then this means that previous accounting policies no longer being applied. But then we are not sure why National Treasury is stating that there is no change in accounting policy or why they being silent on this. So what I'm saying here, Chair, then based on that, again, Kuruwamana is after 10th of June, when I'm supposed to be audited. Now, there is an issue. Then on the 10th in June, the next one, the Auditor General met with the National Treasurer, which now in their report, there is no acknowledgement at all of that issue. Then it says here, from now, Lindi, who is a treasurer, as you know, we met with AG head on the email. It's an email, next email. No, I'm still on the first line of the, yeah, it's written to me now. As you know, we met with AG as a head of audit on the treatment of foreign revenue in order to resolve this matter. I have concluded in summary like this. AG confirmed that the audit of foreign revenue collected is being conducted by DICO's auditors. Information thereon will be transmitted to your auditors on completion. Irrespective of where the revenue is recognized and as indicated in the past, any findings will be reflected in the audit opinion of DICO. They are still confirming that. But the important part is the next sentence. As you are aware, we had a disagreement between ourselves and the AGSA on the recognition of the revenue. In short, our view is that DHA cannot recognize the foreign revenue collected by DICO. And Chair, if you go now, so what this thing meant at the end, they had a compromise now to say, we are changing what we said before 31st of May, we are now changing to say, I must recognize now this revenue. That's why, Chair, now I've got directive now number 2, as I was saying. So it meant now I must resubmit again financial statements. So I have to work on them, and then by the 29th, so the letter again on the 29th of July, whereas now Auditor General should have been finalizing the audit report, I'm still getting a directive. And if you go to that letter, number 5, it says, the next one after the email, that letter, number 5, it says, seeing that the issues raised by the department have been comprehensively addressed in the consulting report, we have to go and engage a consultant to help us. And in order to avoid any potential conflicts between the National Treasury represented position represented in our letter of 26 May 2016 and the consulting report, the National Treasury hereby withdraws paragraph 5 to 10 of the said letter. So what it means now is that by that date, I can't submit the financial statements based on that. It's being now withdrawn because of that agreement. That's why now we have to write a letter now for extension and say, I can't, financial statement, in fact, at that point, we were given a disclaimer by the Auditor General, which we've got the draft report. And then we said, no, we can't because this is not a problem from Home Affairs, is a problem from this accounting treatment. Then after that, Chair, again as the 24th of October, which is the last one now, there was the issue now of that immigration control account I was talking about. Remember I was saying that thing was running outside. Then we look at this and says, no, if that account is outside, you won't be able to transfer it into the National Revenue account in the following year without bringing that account in. It's 24th of October. We agreed. And then, based on that, again on the 14th of November, we have to resubmit another set of financial statements. So for this year, Chair, we submitted 3 sets of financial statements. Based on the changes which were happening. But when you read now the report, it just simply says, management has not been given the responses. We did not reconcile. But we're not reconciling based on these changes which we're having. So, Chair, that's what, you know, if you look, that's what was saying, that the implications, you know, of this was all that issue. That's why, you know, the Auditor General was saying that at the end, what we have achieved for now is just to say we are compliant now with the movement control, minimum modified care standards. But, Chair, there was no time to sit and say, we are reconciling this, we are reconciling this. Yes, we're just based on that directive. I just change and do those financial statements. We submit them. We do this, we do that. But it was based on these changes which I'm talking about, which can now respond. I'm saying I accept when the Auditor General in his report when he was briefing Parliament and say, slow response from OAG in appropriate advising on complex technical matters on DHA was an issue. It was. But unfortunately now in the report, it does not say that. It just put it, which I accept, that response must go to AG from me, but I must be getting it from those agreements between the two parties. And the minister did meet with the Auditor General and said, how are we going to deal with these complex matters? Because we need to, these legacy matters, because we need to clear them. So, Chair, that is the issue which we're sitting with as far as that. Then the other one, Chair, which now is called accruals and payables. Before, Chair, DECO was paying, when we transfer staff members abroad, DECO was paying those staff members on what we called a cost recoverable basis. Then we approached Treasury and said, this thing is a duplication of effort because DECO pays the supplier a rent for a residential accommodation abroad, and then that invoice must come to Home Affairs, and Home Affairs must pay DECO for that. And that was causing a lot of problems on our budget side because a budget is allocated per financial year and DECO delays the documents up to 3 months, and then that budget is returned back to Treasury, but I'm sitting with these invoices. Hence, we approach them to say, no, why don't we transfer a baseline amount to DECO so that now they just pay and order. So that's why, again, in our budget, there was a reduction of that. So what is left here is now to deal with the classification now between that account of what, when you say confirmed means is we have looked at the documentation, it is Home Affairs. But there are those amounts which are in the same account, which are saying it's not for DHA, or maybe for another department, or there's an adjustment which was put on that. So that's what now we're left on this one account, just to reconcile that and then deal with the issue. But with the revenue one, as Chair, as you ask, the only thing which you want to deal with it, which when I come to recommendation, is that DECO is still not 100% responsible. So we still want to go to an approach of saying that function of collection only can be transferred to DECO in totality. So if they collect revenue, deposit it in the national revenue account, and then be accountable for. Then, Chair, in terms of even this, we remember now they said we didn't have an unauthorized expenditure, so that one is not an issue. I'll skip that. I will come to the issue of irregular, Chair, which we have been raised, to say what are the matters which made us to have this. Chair, we split these amounts into two categories because the for current year and then the other one is the previous year, is not the current year. Chair, here is the overtime worked. Where this overtime comes from? Chair, is what there's a rule that anyone must work an overtime within 30%. If it is going to be above that, we must get an approval from the minister. When we're analyzing this, what happens is that, which now this year we've made it differently. For our festive, we'll always say it was its additional resources. We go and post people into our ports of entry. In other years, we're saying maybe we start on the 15th and then now we finish on the 3rd. And then when those people are there, their overtime has been calculated like that. But the volumes hits us because of the opening of the schools. And then we end up now extending those people now in the border. Once we extend them, then now they exceed their 30%. That's why now this year, we are starting now from the 9th up to the 14th of January, so that now we're able to cover that period of the opening of the schools as well. Though it's got another challenge now in terms of our S&T accommodation and all that, because now when those people are there, we need to pay them for that money. So that's what we have. Then, Chair, there is a rule now here on this thing of a local content. It's 400,000. What it means is that when you procure certain items, you need now to check whether this thing is, if it is a furniture, is it a local content, or you can buy it from someone who procuring it abroad, you must do that. So there was a thing which we procure up to 400. So it says 400,000, which now was not meeting that. Then the other one, Chair, we went on tender. This 5.2 million, it was a tender. We went out on tender, but there was a rule which says this supplier must have a gold accreditation or a platinum. Now, the people were doing the evaluation. Now, the mistake which they did, because of the, they only look at the cost of the tender to want to buy from the cheapest. Then now the cheapest was at a gold, whereas the expensive ones were at platinum. And then now they appointed the one which was the cheapest. So, which now what should have happened at that stage? Once they found out that this one is expensive, they should have cancelled that tender and re-advertised it. So that was the issue. Then the 2.3 is a collection of that we must have three quotations, and that amount has already been condoned. That's what we put in the report. So, Chair, the irregular, then it gives us about 9.2 million. The one which now is the 5 million, Chair, I think we reported in the previous years that we had issues of about four matters which were not agreeing with AG in terms of the irregular. And then we followed the process, and then based on that process, three matters were cleared. Then this one, Chair, which was really to us still a sore point, is that we, when we wanted to start our process of the immigration policy, then we approach a human science research council based on security issues and not wanting to go on public with that matter. And then we understood that human science research council is part of government. And then we approached them to develop that study for us. So then the issue was that even if you're going to work with the government entity, you still need to go and do the tender. So they must go and tender. So we didn't go on tender on that one, solely for that basis. I think, Chair, as I've said that now, I wanted to start more with this issues of finance. But as I've said that, Chair, with the performance, we have achieved, you know, the 81%. If time now permits, I can just go to those ones, but they are clear in the report, the items which we did not achieve. So.
Yeah, I'm sure we have been hearing those, I think, for almost four quarters, hearing that progress on the achievements on the specific factors. I think as far as we are concerned, I think the major issue was an explanation why the annual report happened to be delayed. What are the challenges? What is the state of those challenges? Have we gone beyond them so that then they don't get repeated? And I think that was the major crucial issues. Otherwise, the rest we are able to extract from the annual report to read them. And so it's just simply to the question of course, is the status on the question of personnel. Maybe I think it will, we'll really need to understand, see what is the status of personnel in relation to the capping, in relation to the letters that we wrote to Treasury, whether there is any sort of responses to that. And then if nothing, of course, is that we have planned in the next quarter to call Treasury to come here and explain to us how do they see the budget of Home Affairs in relation to the mandates that have been given to Home Affairs endless. I think we may proceed on any other issues that you think it is very important, DG. Of course, it's other than these targets. I mean, the targets, I think, we are clear, but there are those ones that have got some other political and service delivery relations. Then that may, you may need to take us on.
No, Chair, thanks very much. No, Chair, just to go now in terms of how, what are the things which we must, we'll be focusing on them as a medium-term priorities, which we are taking it from the priorities of, remember we presented what are the, they are here, what are the five priorities. We're saying as a department, we still need to complete our modernization program with specific emphasis on the national identity system. The issue, Chair, of the establishment of BMA as a, today we're also hoping that we'll be going through the line by line. And it's one of the things which now are reflected that is not achieved. And we are worried about that again for this current year. That might be an issue for us. And then we need to finalize the policy on international migration. And then also now we are, another colleagues now are with the JCPS cluster where we are presenting now our business case for the repositioning of DHA as a highly secure and a modern department. And that would link, Chair, with your question about a funding model for Home Affairs, because the current one we have, we don't see that it will take us anywhere, Chair. And in that, there's still that issue, Chair, which we explained that we are funded now with that self-financing, which it causes some problems because that money, you don't get it with your budget at the beginning of the year. It waits for the process. For instance, the one of this year, we will get it probably around about February because it must follow the process now of coming to Parliament and then goes and then be signed by the President. So it's something which they are looking at it as treasure. And we believe, Chair, that what has made improvement in terms of our service delivery is the implementation of the Metapile initiative, which says, I am a leader in my space. So as that office manager or as a FLO who's capturing that passport, I must understand I'm a leader in that space. So if there is an issue, I must be able to deal with it. And want to continue with our optimization of the DHA contact center. With the contact center, I said there's no more a messenger type of a process. Now, if people call that contact center, they're able now, the agents, to go through the system and understand where your product is at which stage. Then we want to continue the improvement on the governance and administrative practices, because if we do that, is what it will give us the reports as we see them now improving. Chair, is something which we really want to persist about this issue of the discontinuation of the Green ID book, but the intervention there, Chair, which will be coming back with, from Parliament already, about our relationship with the banks, so that now the banks are able to help us to roll out this proposal. If we don't complete the issue of the Green ID books, we don't get the full benefit of what the smart card it's supposed to give to the country. And the minister has been saying to us, we need to go and sell the smart card as a product into other government departments, like Department of Transport, which needs the driver's license. And now we know SASSA now is having problems about the payments and all that, but the key thing is the identity, because if we have that, then we'll be able to solve your problems. We want to continue with the issue of fight against fraud and corruption in the department, something which we are taking seriously as we launched the Visa Masina project. Then with regard to the DICO, so I was saying that we're going to be sitting now this year to make sure that we finalize both. Now, these accounts now, Chair, as we said, they are closed. Remember, I'm no longer now getting any new information on those accounts because we no longer charge a repatriation, I'm no longer have fines. All that is left now is that revenue. Hence, we're saying we are looking at, when we're dealing with the PMA, we learn a concept there that you can transfer a function from one organization to the other through this presidential proclamation. So it's something which we want to look at, that only the collection part, if now we can transfer to DICO, then it can solve our problem. But it's something which we will still be exploring, whether it's something which we need to work. Chair, that's what I wanted to say. I say thanks very much.
No, thank you. Is there anything that you can say about your audit committee and your internal audit? Is there anything about their performance, about their existence and effectiveness or whatever? Just in short.
As you can see, we had some members. There are members who have now beefed it up. You'll see now there were members who left during August 2015, and then now we've added other members, which were three first, and then others were only appointed in February 20. So now we've got a full audit committee with various skills around that. Then internal audit, Chair, is not a big internal audit, which should fit the size of the Department of Home Affairs. More special that we still have the lag, which is foreign. But with the numbers which we have, they are really not at the level we want. But they are part of this request which we have made to Treasury around the issue of this capping of the staff.
Well, as long as we are aware that if the internal audit is weak or it's not sufficient, then there will always be room for some other offices to go astray without somebody to blow the whistle and say, no, you are getting lost. Then because I think it's the internal audit is almost like, it's part of the department, but they have got the capacity as well to be referees, then to assist. So if the internal audit is weak or doesn't have capacity, whether in terms of numbers or skills or whatever, then they will actually affect the performance of the department. Because it is not every official that we employ that knows the problems and have the determination to do things right. People will always try and complete their task as short as possible, even taking shortcuts at certain point. And then if there is no referee, then they will always take the shortest route. And of course is that the audit committee itself as well, if it is not performing, it's not efficient, or it has been weak, probably then you will have challenges. Because when you read this issue where we needed to get three quotations or whatever, but we have been able to proceed to purchase, it can always tell you that the internal audit has been weak at that particular moment, because they should have actually said, no, your rule wants three quotations. So they were not there, or they were not aware of it. I think we just need to make sure that those two units and then get some sort of checking up. Honorable members, here we are now. The department has explained itself, and of course is that the Hudda General will have to explain something. Because it looks like your determination in relation to all the ups and downs that were happening in the department in relation to the accounting policies. I think if there is any talk that can be made, because of course is that when the DG says no, we are saying that they are not responding or slow response, but whereas their response is actually influenced by others outside, and then it becomes a bit of a challenge. Are there any issues to be raised with the DG or with the department? Mekenye.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG, for the report. My first question will be on the issue of concerning the report from the AG on the status of key controls and regressing in audit outcomes. Now, it was stated that there is a lack of leadership, of sufficient management, oversight, and lack of document supporting performance indicators. It is an ongoing process. How do you address that problem? Because when I look at they stated that they talk about the need that those issues need intervention. The issue of human resource management together with ICT governance, that they are a concern. They are a concern. And then leadership needs intervention. But on page 8, on the reasons for improvement, you say that there is improvement. Now, to my understanding, that contradicts what the AG has just said. If you talk about those two bullets, last bullets on page 8, saying that there is improvement due to the revised HR structure, and then secondly, improved governance and accountability. Now, to my understanding now, I don't understand, because it seems as if now there is contradiction in these issues. If the AG says that there's an intervention that is needed, but at the same time, on the other side, there is improvement. But now you don't understand, how do you address this problem? How do you address it? As much as I understand what you have told us about this improvement, noting that there's a different case that is said by the Auditor General in that case of lack of sufficient office management, the oversight and documents also. So how do you address this problem? To my understanding, because I'm worried, because even the HR management and ICT governance, which to my understanding that is the lack of administration, there's a problem with lack of administration there. Noting that, that is a concern to the AG. But I don't see it as a concern, but maybe you can just elaborate more what is the problem. And secondly, there's this issue of DECO. This long-standing inability to support for the documents that support monies. Who will be responsible if the money is not accounted for? DECO versus Home Affairs. So who will be responsible? Because if there are no supporting documents, there's a problem there. That's why we're always worried about the accounting officer in all these meetings, because that is a concern. To have money, no documents, supporting documents. Therefore, to have documents, no supporting money. So who will account for that? Just the last one. Is there any progress in the financial phase in the Interministerial Committee on the issue of visa regulations? Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nisi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation. I've got only two short questions to make. My first question, Chair, I just want to check from the department. What impact is the late tabling of this annual report likely to have on the budgeting cycle of the DHA? And also to get clarity, if there has been any progress that can be reported by the department on the pending legal actions against the DHA cited on the annual report. And also, would like to know, Chair, what engagement has the DHA had with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, and what can be done in this regard to address the ongoing challenges with the procurement and tender processes in the DHA. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And in the absence of any other further question, Honorable Raputi.
Thank you very much, DG. You know, looking at this directive that came from Lindy Botwick, Monique Kruger, Zoliza Zokala. You know, I think probably it was really cumbersome. You know, every time we do this, you know, it's like a leaking bucket. Where are they? Lindy Botwick, Monique Kruger, Zoliza Zokala. Because somehow really, I think they were not really assisting. It was just writing English and all. They were not really watching and really giving leadership. I think they could have also come and present here. And thank you very much for keeping this directive, because I'm just asking myself, if I was you sitting in that position, you know, taking this big English concerning the what is expected of the department. So, Chairperson, really, Lindy, Monique, Zoliso, what assistance did they really give? I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndongeni.
Thanks, Chair. Can the department tell us how many departments have been targeted and how many have been achieved so far? Secondly, what is the current situation between DHA, National Treasurer, and AG? Because it means there's a lot of, I don't know whether it's a misunderstanding or it's a what, as my colleague says, or about this document, and the AG have got another document saying other things, so I don't know which is which, I don't know which is right, which is wrong. Maybe can be both of them going to answer us. It's not for the department, even in AG on the other side. Can you tell us the current situation between these letters and what? Secondly,
thank you very much. I think, like as I said before, that the Auditor General may need to explain something, whether this paper trail of instructions to Home Affairs, whether they were aware of them, Of course, that some are originating from the Auditor General's office. Then there are others that originate from other offices like Treasury. Whether they were aware of that and then they were aware of the impact they have on these particular matters and how much have that actually either hardened the Auditor General or softened the Auditor General when the Auditor General was looking at the, especially the time frames. I'm sure you'll remember, honorable members, that we tried to invite the Auditor General and the department last week for them to come and explain what are the challenges that are actually keeping the audit opinion in their offices, not to go to Home Affairs. Because we realized that there is something very big that Department of Home Affairs is not telling us. So we wanted the real people to tell us what is there that is keeping the audit opinion. And then in response of that, then we received an email that says, we have spoken or we should ask our parliamentary officer then to request a postponement so that we can have an opportunity of finalizing the audit so that we go there after having finished. But we're seriously interested in what was actually causing the problem because the annual report, I think it was already out waiting for that portion of the audit opinion only. And then, but we could not manage to get the Auditor General on that specific time. But then now, when we receive this briefing now on the paper trail between the department and the relevant stakeholders, then it shows that although the department may have erred on certain things, but others have actually made it to fail to comply with the times of tabling the annual report in time, whether it has got misstatements or findings or whatever, but that's the question of the time for the department to submit or table the annual report. It has been made to fail to do that. It has been made to fail. If you follow this paper trail that is in here, and then that's what one can pick up. And then DG, you may respond, and then the general then will respond, and then the minister then will come in if he has got some good news about moving towards clean audit. Proceed, DG.
Well, thanks, Chair. From Honorable Kenya, when we say there is an improvement, we are comparing year to year. We are not saying we are, oh, it's out, okay. But I can respond. We are not saying we are 100%. We are saying last year we achieved 70% of the targets and this year 81%. And we'll recall that last year, Auditor General raised issues around that a percentage, but now this year they're saying that both immigration and civics has improved. And Chair, that, as we have put in our report, was also due to internal audit, because what we're doing now, for every quarter report, they go and look at it and check whether the evidence which we have is correct. That's why if you look at what we've been reporting every quarter is consistent. What we have not achieved is what we've been reporting that we have not achieved. So that's what we're talking about. Then the issue of the ICT governance. Yes, ICT is still an issue. In fact, in the department as we speak, a chair which is affected by this, the CIO, Chief Information Officer we have, is an acting person. Because when the budget was cut at the point when we're supposed to appoint. But now we would be looking, both that people have resigned now in the department, and based on that, we're still looking at that. We'll be going to the minister now and say, Minister, there is a change of so much based on this. Can we fill so many positions? But I don't want to be many positions as such, but something which we are looking. So that's what we were talking about. And Chair, when we come now to the issue of DECO, I think what we have explained clearly that if the auditors go and audit the foreign revenue approach, which is not audited by our auditors, which is located to Home Affairs, is audited by the auditors located to DECO. If there is an error or an omission there, it will be accountable to us, not to DECO. But when we met with the auditors, which are auditing DECO, they said this thing will depend on a materiality, because an error at DECO might not be material. Then them, they might not get a problem. But if to us is material, then we'll get the problem. So it will still work. They said DECO is not that they will be clean if that error is material. But it does not talk to the issues. You know, if there is money lost, so they can come to us. It will be that individual who has taken the money. Then, Chair, on the issue of what is the progress around our visa regulations, Chair, South Africa just issued a report as at quarter September. In that quarter, it has shown the impact that there's tourism, there's no, the numbers are saying they are improving. It's not our report, it's the report from the state of South Africa. But as a department, you will recall that in this matter, where there were commitments which we gave to that IMC, 0 to 3 months, and then 3 months to a year, and then 1 year and beyond. So that period ended in end of October. So now we've prepared now a report of the progress which we have made now in that quarter. So in fact, tomorrow we will be now informing the stakeholders where we are with that process. Already
Thank you. Or an omission at DECO, it will still be accountable to us.
So that's why I was saying what our approach now would be the one of the transferring that part so that now Tiko collects money, because we don't get money directly from the revenue. It still goes to the National Revenue Fund and then allocated to us. So, Chair, we were saying now we have achieved yet that part, but it was not an easy road. As I'm saying that we're working together with them, which we acknowledge that, to say, with the Auditor General and Treasurer, we're working on these issues, all of that. So I was just putting there to say, this is what we have. It's not that we're not doing anything as a department, but we're doing that within those processes. That's why we'll be going to the meetings at AG. We don't agree on this, then we come to what we approach, and then even when they approach us to say, put this in a control account, we agreed on that, and then we go and what it means, but it was really not an easy process, Chair.
Yeah, I think we'll just have the Auditor General just simply to say a word. But I think among the things that the Auditor General will speak to, I really just need clarity. Who is in charge? See, how can I phrase this question? Who owns the accounting policies? Who's in charge of the accounting policies? If Treasury gives a particular directive to Home Affairs and Home Affairs complies, and then the Auditor General finds that no, this policy is not right, do they have to go to the person who gave that directive as Treasury, or do they have to say Home Affairs, this is not right? Or they must go to the origin of the policy directive and say Home Affairs has complied with your directive. They are not wrong, they have complied. But your directive is wrong. And handle the other side of the fence. Or do you have to there and there now deal with that policy with the ODT? I just want just a little bit of clarity on that, because that is what I'm seeing that has actually transpired, because one understood, since I've been here in Parliament, one understood that the account general, Treasury, they were giving Treasury, they call it Treasury whatever, notes or guidelines or whatever to all the organs of state to comply with, and when they do their things, they are supposed to comply with that. Now there is this one that came out. And then, but when the document has been submitted for audit, then it actually flies into their face from the Office of the Auditor General. Flies into their face, then snowballing started. Were we supposed to deal with the department on that particular directive, or with Treasury, for Treasury to correct its directive, and then audit Home Affairs according to the directives that they have been given at that particular time? That's why I want to know who actually owns the accounting policies, the directives. Is it the Auditor General or the Account General or Treasury, or who is that? So that we know exactly who, where to make noise to, and then and where to expect the directives on this particular matter. Then the second issue relates to the determination of irregular expenditure. Wasteful expenditure is very easy. And that part that relates to having procured things without the necessary procedures, blah, blah, blah. But then when you have some sort of an explanation, and then the explanation is made, then sometimes this explanation makes sense to Auditor General, Auditor General agrees. Sometimes this explanation doesn't make sense to the Auditor General, then the Auditor General doesn't agree, and then he makes a finding. Does this auditees have some sort of a guideline on the principles how to actually try and comply, that when they do the explanations to the Auditor General, then whatever is wrong is wrong, whatever is right is right? Because up to now, I think when I looked at the report of the Auditor General, there is a complaint from the Office of the Auditor General that certain auditees, when you have made a finding, not Home Affairs alone, there was a rebut from management, because then they were raising certain issues that informed them to do certain things. But then in the Office of the Auditor General, then there is a deaf ear, according to them. Now the question is, how do we then make sure that there is clarity, that we don't have this kind of a thing? Because the same, I'm sure, is even in Home Affairs, there is that particular note that they were trying to explain something, rebutting your opinion on a particular transaction. And then the question, of course, is the valuation system, when you actually made that determination, because surely what is a disturbance to one person, it may be a chaos or a crisis to another person. That's my basis of what I'm trying to ask. And then, I think you may proceed, Auditor General, whatever you can empower us. Thanks very much. If you are 2 or 3, then you can go in a line.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Thanks for the questions. Who is in charge of the accounting policies and the accounting standards? Very clearly, National Treasury is. So we audit against what National Treasury issues to the departments. For instance, if we go to the Directive 1 that we have been talking about earlier, you know, it was that there had been engagement, because now the process changed in 2015-16, and the deviation that the Department of Home Affairs had enjoyed for a number of years to, you know, around foreign revenue, in the sense that they weren't fully complying with MCS, and they got that deviation from National Treasury to say you can deviate from the MCS and still almost escape a qualification based on fair presentation. So it's something that they had been enjoying for a number of years, and that fell away as at the end of the last audit report, not this current one we're looking at. So when that fell away, Chair, obviously there needed to be a process to say how do we deal with this repatriation of the foreign revenue, and the process to say now, let it go straight from DERCO to the National Treasury via to the NRF via the National Treasury. So that engagement took place between the AG and the National Treasury. And I must again maybe emphasize, in terms of the MCS, the accounting officer is mandated to prepare Fs that comply with the standard, with the modified CAT standard. And then as part of, as proactive steps.
I'm not sure whether I should not intervene on that debate, because it is going to actually make others to respond. And then I would not have loved us to go to the actual matter, because I think that actual matter, it has been narrated by the letters that have been going through. I think we understand what was happening. The question is, probably have already answered, that the treasury or whatever is in charge of the accounting policy. Now, the question, the next question that you are supposed to respond to is, if you find, when you are doing an audit, you find that one policy is not the way you understand, where do you go? Do you start dealing with it on that particular financial statement of a particular auditee, or you go back to treasury and you go and sort out that thing the other side, but the auditee gets audited according to the rules that are in front of that auditee at that particular time when the financial statements are being prepared? That's what I just wanted to know, because in this particular case, the actual financial statements prepared in terms of that directive then were held back, questioned, you see, because of a misdirection of treasury. Then we did not say, you know, well, this is treasury directive, then Home Affairs, you are complying. And then when you finish, then you go to treasury and say, treasury, that directive you gave to Home Affairs, it's not right. We need to make sure that it's corrected. And then it is corrected so that when Home Affairs prepares its next financial statement or whatever, then they must be expected to comply with the new directive. That's the issue that I just wanted to say, to understand from your side. Do you attack that financial statement there and there and say the directive you are using is not what we want or what we understand, it's wrong, and then start engaging treasury, but engaging it online on the financial statement of Home Affairs. And as a consequence, Home Affairs financial statements then are held back until the storm around that policy with treasure is settled. And unfortunately, it took months. That's why today we find ourselves in this unfortunate situation where we are running out there and in. We should have dealt with the annual report long ago. But unfortunately, that is the consequence of what is happening. Now, that's why I just wanted to know, as a matter of principle, how do you deal with that if an auditee has prepared financial statements on the basis of a particular directive from Treasury, but you don't agree with that particular directive? How do you then deal with it? Do you make the auditee suffer while you are correcting that with Treasury? Or you let the auditee's job go past because it's compliant with the directive, but then you then now find space with the treasury and deal with the particular policies, accounting policies? How do you actually deal with this? I think that's what we just wanted to understand. Not necessarily speaking to the actual methods, because otherwise if you go to deeper to the actual methods, then the DG will try to respond and say, no, you are not correct here, no, you are not representing correct. And then we end up finding with the deputy minister and the minister getting involved, and then we have about and start looking for gloves here. Okay. I'm sure there are, I'll try to give you a direct.
Yes.
What is there that we expect?
No, thanks, Shepard. I think we'll take both the treasury and the auditee. For instance, we won't leave the auditee out of the loop to inform them, to say how you've treated this matter does not align with the MCS or does not achieve fair presentation, which I think was the case here with Home Affairs as well. But in the meantime, we will also engage the standard setters, which is National Treasury, to say the directive that particular directive you've issued on this matter, after careful consideration, does not achieve presentation. So we will engage both the auditee and the standard setters on the matter as soon as it becomes apparent to us. I think my colleague Unavin can take us through the timeline, especially in this particular case and the interaction.
Okay, is there anyone that wants to make a contribution from the Auditor General?
I think, Chair, where it comes from is that the Auditor General, in terms of the Public Audit Act, is required to issue a fair presentation opinion. You understand? So to comply with that, then the intention is the MCS achieves fair presentation. Okay. entity does not comply with the MCS, then you've got a challenge where you can't issue a fair presentation opinion. And where there are issues that, in terms of the MCS, where we're saying if there's issues of contention, then we have our technical unit engages with National Treasury's technical unit, and there's the Accounting Standards Board that's also part of that meeting. You understand? But the intention is that there will be all those engagements, but the intention is that National Treasury will then give the instruction to the entities, the departments, in terms of what needs to be done. I think in this situation, what happened was that if we go back to the first letter when we talk of Directive 1, the MCS was undergoing a change. So at that point in time, in December last year, National Treasury said, this is how we'll account for it. Okay. Now, I think we mustn't mix things up, because, and that's up until 29th of May this year, because in the audit committee on 29th of May, we agreed that whether the amount is a narrative or in the financial statements, it's not going to be a big exercise, because all it is, it requires is a journal entry. You understand? Because what you need to have is, if your numbers are correct, if your amounts are supported, you've got this adequate supporting document, you've got a proper document trail, then I think what we came to agreement in that audit committee is to say, you know, once this matter is sorted out, it's a question of, is it in a note to the financial statements, or do we say debit this, credit this, and put it into the face of the financial statements. The challenge that came in was the prior years, you understand, and I think there was a misunderstanding of what, that's why when the department went through it, the information, and they said, they referred to a communication we sent out where we said, we aren't clear on this, because, and then we tried to channel it through the department, because we said, because you also need that clarity, you understand, because our understanding from National Treasury on that was to say, no, that's the department's understanding was wrong, you understand. So, but what we say, in the end, like, I mean, all departments have CFOs, they've got a finance function, and these are competent people that would engage Treasury and would look through, and I think throughout the process, we asked, this, you know, we asked, we said, look at this, look at the MCS, make sure you comply, because what was the challenge in 14-15 was, at the last minute, when there was this decision that some of the policy that was used, or the deviations that were granted, or the directive, you want to call it, that was granted by National Treasury was not compliant and was not achieving fair presentation, then that created a real fallout. So the question was to say, let's resolve all these issues going forward. And that's why we also say, you know, when we refer to slow response, we must understand the foreign revenue issue is not something that started December. It started 5 years ago. You understand? There was engagements, there was letters between the Department and National Treasury. The Department requested a delay to implement the policy. So it's something that has evolved. But as that is evolving, your MCS is also evolving, you know, your accounting standards. So what has happened is, yes, there's all this engagement, you understand? And in the end, yes, there was issues that came across, but what we're saying is these issues, that's why we say we have to identify these issues up front and we have to engage on it up front. You know, but I think what was when we met in May with the financial statements, we said we are hoping that, you know, in the end, it's just a question of a journal entry. You understand? I think where the challenge came in is when you started looking at the information that supports this and those reconciliations, and when I speak of the daily disciplines, those are the areas that cause problems. And I think also if you start looking at the financial statements and you take it back to 29th May and you take it from there, you didn't have a complete set of financial statements on the 29th of May. You know, it was submitted again on the 31st. And then subsequent to that, the information that supports it is not correct. You understand? So that was the challenges that were experienced. So part of the reason why we're here today, that we, you know, at this late stage is there's a lot of other aspects that came up, you understand? But, I mean, where the department says they submitted three different sets of financials, well, it's more than that, you know, because the financials weren't of an adequate quality. Also, when we got direction on it, you know, it wasn't of a proper quality to audit, so it was a back and forth in essence.
Yeah, well, honorable members, there are the responses, but I'm just a little bit worried, when you are saying that, when you explain the slow response, then it looks like you are talking about historical things. I thought that the audit opinion that is in front of us is in relation to the year under review, not an attitude that they've developed in the past 4 or 5 years, and then now, even when there is no slow response now, but you are not getting a particular thing, and then you say, no, I'm tired of this nonsense, and then you put in that sentence, slow response. If it is based on that, then I don't think that it assists us, because it will seek to actually ignore some of the improvements. That's why I was saying is, on the first side, on governance, whatever, ICT and the rest, the picture that was painted there is that we are painting a department with no leadership. But then when we go forward, then we are actually indicating certain improvements. Who says? Has actually indicated certain improvements moving forward. Then to me, there's a contradiction, you see. But then at the end of the day, what one was just saying is that I think we just need to appreciate that the engagement that we had because of the accounting policy, it did have adverse effect in terms of the timelier submission of the department of its annual report. And of course, is that ordinarily, when you raise matters of finance and you expect the department to respond quickly, the quicker they respond, the lower the quality of the response in terms of finance. So one can expect that if on a particular day we change the board accounting policy, then we send it to the department, and the department is in a hurry to comply in order to submit an annual report, they may not go deep into their files, into their records, and make sure that everything is intact, because that will ordinarily take time. Hence, you may be questioning the quality of the responses that they brought in order for them to comply. But I really still think that we may need to have a better way of dealing with this kind of things when they arise, especially when you're dealing with the auditing of financial statements. If the policy just changes while the financial statements are in front of you, it's a recipe of crisis. If a policy, the accounting policy, changes in front of you, it's a recipe, because then you can remember the paper trail of the accounts that are being put together that leads to those totals. If you change it today, then the whole filing system then has to be relooked, and then to actually make sure that it produces new totals, channels, or whatever. I mean, I'm not an accountant, but I'm just a little bit clearer, because I've worked with those things for quite a long time. And that's what I'm just saying. It's the crisis we have with the annual report of Home Affairs, it is largely from outside influence. Let alone that they may not have complied with certain few things there, but if they've been directed to tribunal men, and then we say no, then the chaos has started. And I think that is the thing that we are really taking note of, and really we would like that to be corrected. You remember in the last year, honorable members, we really said the department must make sure that it has some meeting with Auditor General to make sure that we don't want to come back with the issue of debt the following financial year. And when you look at this paper trail here, you can see that there was an attempt to actually get over this thing. And then directives were given. Even early March or whatever were given to really make sure that we get over this thing of DERCO issues. But then we are still stuck with the DERCO issues today, because the goalposts have been shifted. The goalposts have been shifted. The dismantling of that particular account into a series of different accounts that people now must go and see, either in front of the computer or in the archives, and they're looking for figures, separating figures left and right, to actually be able to do that. That it needs time. It doesn't need a 1 week of compliance in order for them to submit the annual report. And remember, it is a key thing for the department to table that. The annual report is key. So you have one side putting brakes, the other side is actually putting an accelerator to be able to submit the annual report. Others are putting brakes on it. That's what we are finding ourselves in the middle. And then not happy about it, I can say so. And then we have not assisted each other in a manner that it's appreciable. But I think we want to actually also say that we still need to continue and assist each other and get over this. And then we are happy that now the accounting policy is very clear now to the department. But then there is an unintended consequence that must deal with and make sure that 6 months down the line, then you handle it with the Auditor General and agree, as well as Treasury, and make sure that it has been handled in a manner. Next year, let us not speak about Telco, because we have changed the law. That account is dead, actually. But it's making us to have pain and stress unnecessary. Let's assist each other. We are educated, we are learned, we are capacitated, we are skilled to be able to sort this thing. Yes, I think assist us to actually get over. Minister, the platform is yours.
Thank you.
Don't forget to tell us the good news if they are there.
Thank you, Chair. Well, good news about what? the good news, Chair, is that the department performance against key performance indicators continues to improve. That's good. We come from very, very low, I think, and now we are at above 81% compared to 70% in the previous financial year. So that's quite good. Secondly, Chair, with regard to the visa regulations, really, the only outstanding thing was the one that related to traveling minors, because there we needed first to establish a new immigration advisory board, which was subsequently established. We've tabled the amendment to them, they've approved it, and so we're ready to implement. And we are still engaging with social development around letters of consent, particularly from spouses or from parents. Let me say parents, because once you are exes, you are no longer spouses. From parents, especially when they have broken up and they are fighting and they bring the child into the center of the fight. So those are good news. The other good news is that we've bolstered the audit committee. I'm sure you will realize in the report that we've appointed additional people onto the audit committee to bring us additional skills to help us address the challenges which are of concern to the department with regard to our audit. And we really are doing everything within our power to ensure that we ultimately as Home Affairs get a clean audit. We really are working hard. And I think to the extent that all the relevant partners can come to the party and ensure that we don't change the rules of the game in the middle of the game, we should be in a position to have clarity as to what requirements are there for us to account for the use of public resources. I think the issue really of changing the rules of the game in the middle of the game has been a tremendous impediment for us. And I think the chair hits the nail on the head in how you approach it. Because it then meant we needed to go back, prepare statements to resubmit and account differently. It's a matter that we need to resolve. We've had several meetings, not only as the officials, but at the executive authority level, between ourselves and the AG, at our initiative, sometimes at the request of the AG. I think it does concern me when it appears that the executive authority did not provide sufficient assurance for our accounting as the department, because we really did have several engagements, constructive engagements. Of course, it also concerns me because I didn't think that the executive authority accounts to the AG. I don't. I account to Parliament and to Cabinet and can be judged for my performance by those two institutions. But that notwithstanding, my sense, Chair, is that we need to try, both of us, to go beyond the call of duty to improve our relations, so that we are able to improve the situation. The department is asking for no favors. All we want to know is clarity as to the rules of the game, certainty as to those rules, and so that we can be able to perform as well as we should, account as well as we should. So I think, Chair, we take the views that are being presented here. We are concerned ourselves about this massive delay in terms of our report, but are happy that we are where we are and have been accommodated, and we wish to thank the committee itself as well as the chairperson in particular for doing all you could to ensure that we could finally present the report to the committee late in the day as it is. But we really do appreciate deeply. We are concerned about the BMA process, and we are still trying to do everything we can to move that process. I think one should say, Chair, that insofar as the BMA is concerned, and from where we sit, until Cabinet proclaims that it has changed its decision, the standing decisions of Cabinet about the BMA are as we understand them. And we will still try. We are still trying to engage with our colleagues to resolve whatever misunderstanding there may be, or misgivings they may be among themselves, particularly with regard to the issue of the customs function. But from way back from 2013, the cabinet's view has been very persistent on the BMA. And so I think one could conclude on that point. Thanks.
No, thanks. I don't think they are voting. I think this they are rising. Because it just ran forward. 5 seconds. Yeah, I think we are worried because we have taken some strides, especially in relation with the BMA, and compromises have been made from the original bill. And we are happy and with the compromises that have been made, because we know that this BMA is going to be rolled out maybe over 5 years or even 10 years, depending on the financial allocations that will be made to actually fast track it. And then there isn't supposed to be serious challenges, because there is time, you know, to actually correct or whatever, or mitigate any unintended consequence on the BMA. But it looks like there is something more to what we are actually seeing or hearing. And of course, is that, like as I've said, is that I've heard today, last night or today, that you are meeting 9:30 today, and then there is this other postponement to this afternoon. I don't know, because we are having a schedule this afternoon, and that schedule may take us many hours, depending on the behavior of the renowned opposition members in the House, and then how they try to go about things. But if they do the same, like as we know them, we may go until 1 o'clock midnight. But we will still try and persuade Minister that the current proposal that we have made in the bill to be accepted and stand as they are. Because as a committee, we have already gone a step that we have agreed on those amendments we have made official. In other words, is that we are actually awaiting an outcome from your engagement that confirms the current position that we have agreed. If it is different from this, the likelihood is that we can't go and undo our decision. Then the changes should follow the NCOP process. Otherwise, then we are going to have confusion on the legislative process in Parliament. And that will be a little bit illegal, unless if I'm advised differently. And honorable members, I think we can thank the department having graced this particular occasion under difficult times, and also the Auditor General having addressed us and raised those matters that the department must sort out in order to move towards the clean audit. I think we appreciate that. And also, of course, is that the performance that we have done to actually sustain certain elements of your activities and improving on some, we do appreciate that as Home Affairs. But also, we are worried about the circumstances that actually ensued before the completion of the audit opinion. We are worried, and then we'll really want to emphasize that then we must see an improved situation as we move forward, how to handle those things, and so that we don't have other persons enduring a lot of pain and strain, because you know, every day when you have to answer to the chief whip and the house chair when the annual report is going to be tabled, then I have to answer. Sometimes I say I don't know, and when I'm expected to be knowing, it's very problematic and very painful. And when all other portfolio committees present their report in the house, then nothing is seen from our committee, as if, you know, we are at the back of a train. You know, it's, we don't know where we're going, because the tractor is driven by others. No, we want to be part of everybody. And then, so all of us, then we must assist each other to achieve our goals that we are supposed to achieve. And then we will actually process the report. I think it will be drafted, and then it will go through other next steps. I don't think it will be appropriate to table the report any time between today and tomorrow, because then this report, then it will elapse. You table it in the ATC, it elapses. And then we come now again in January when we reopen. Then we must battle with the programming to revive the report. And a very, very tough job. I've been engaged with that one in the previous years. Very problematic. And then we prepare the report, and then it will go all the other steps of quality control, and then we'll take the decision how the report, and then it is agreed to by the committee, the final draft, and then being tabled to the ATC to be part of the records of finance. I think that we will try and engage on that specific one. And then we'll see with the team here in front, together with the committee, how we're going to take it. But I'm happy that we have actually relieved the department and the Auditor General on this exercise. You have done your part. You can go on holidays. We have the problem how to deal with this moving from now. Thank you very much. I think we should also thank all other guests that have visited us, and those that are actually stealing news from us. Thank you very much. And then, honorable members, this meeting then is closed. And we may not see each other before Christmas. I think everybody must have a nice Christmas and a nice New Year, and come back fresh with no blemishes or scratches. Thank you very much.